You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Good morning, Brad. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great.
Man, it is frosty in May in Atlanta. This is really weird. Got up this morning, heard my heater kick on, come downstairs. And I'm like, wow, that's weird. And I look on my watch and I see the temperature was 46 degrees, which never, ever, ever happens here in May.
It is nice, 68 degrees here this morning.
Well, let's jump into stuff. We got we're minus Jim this week. He's wandering around being a total tourist in New York City. I figure after what 3 days wandering around by oneself in New York, that would be like I'd be done by like after the first day. But wow, man, he's, I don't know if you've been seeing the stuff he's been doing on Snapchat, but just nonstop.
He enjoys finding new things to do.
Well, not just that, but he had his little progress updates on the watch. So this is the most exercise Jim's gotten in forever. This is, he has walked, I think he said 13,000 steps.
Oh, that's just one day for me. I'm just kidding. Probably a year.
Yeah, he's been trucking it around. It's been entertaining to watch all the little stuff he's been doing. I got to say, the funniest thing that he said that he sent to us was, I didn't expect New York City to be so cramped. It's like, really? That kind of shocked me.
Yeah, there's only, 100 million people that live there? It's probably not that many, but it's a lot. I mean, it's like Japan. It's just, there's a lot of people in a tiny little space.
If you've ever watched any of the Marvel shows on Netflix, all the ones that are set in New York, you know, like Luke Cage or Iron Fist or Jessica Jones or Daredevil, the trailer for The Defenders dropped this week, and yet it features, just like all the other shows, a fight in a narrow hallway. And one of the comments that I read was, well, what do you expect? That's real estate in New York. They can't stage elaborate fights. It has to be in a tiny, cramped hallway every single time.
That's right.
Did you see the trailer for that, Brad?
No, I haven't, actually.
Looks really, really good. Of course, all of those shows are pretty good. Did you get around to watching Iron Fist just by any chance?
I've been a total slacker. I haven't been watching that. The last couple of weeks have been a real humdinger for work-wise. So I've pretty much just come home and put my head on the pillow every night.
Can't blame you for that. I can't blame you for that. You didn't miss much with Iron Fist. It was pretty terrible. Though I will say, I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy the other day. That was an awesome movie. That was so good.
Yeah, can't wait to go see that. We'll probably go see it maybe this afternoon.
I enjoyed it much better than the first, and I really liked the first one a lot. So this was really good. And, you know, there's five post-credit sequences, so prepare to be amazed. There's a lot of deep cuts from the comics that make it in there. If you're not up on things, some of them you may have to come home and Google. But it was really good. I really like the reveals they stuck in there and what they've sort of set up for the future.
That's exciting. Good to know.
And if you're a real nerd, the Stan Lee cameos are just the best in this one. It confirms a long-standing theory about his role in the Marvel universe, which is nice.
It's funny that I you always know that you're gonna see him. And yet I'm still kind of, I have that, oh, there he is kind of moment whenever he appears, because it's always sort of a funny moment.
It is. And this one in particular, it was, you could tell the nerds in the audience, well, it was opening night at like 10 o'clock. So, you know, there's a lot of nerds in the audience, but the clapping and cheering when his big reveal happens in the movie was kind of nice.
That's fun.
Well, let's jump into what do we got to talk about this week? Well, let's see. So the thing that I'm happiest about is that it looks like Amazon's video app is finally coming to Apple TV this summer. Insiders are saying. Of course, Apple and Amazon remain mum. They haven't said anything, but stands to reason that we're going to get this. And the rumor has it that it took Tim Cook and Jeff Bezos to be able to come together and work out the terms behind the scenes. What do you think about that? Do you watch a lot of instant video or not?
Whenever there's a new show on, I usually do. There was that Man in the High Castle, and there's a few others that I do try to catch whenever they're on. Usually whenever you hear other folks talking about it, you know, quote, by the water cooler kind of thing. I'm excited about it just because I mean, it seems like the only reason I switch over to my Roku would be to use specific things that are on that you can get on the Roku, but not, say, on the Apple TV. And one of those would be the Amazon Instant Video app.
Same here. I mean, on my primary TV in the living room, I have a Fire Stick and I have the Roku and I have the Apple TV. And my default go-to is the Apple TV. And I know a lot of people have given it grief since it's come out. But honestly, it's the interface that I'm the happiest with. And it's the one that I probably use the most. And there are a lot of things that I start watching on Amazon and I never finish because I hate flipping over. Like the Fire Stick's interface, even the most recent generation, is just, it's terrible. It's slow. It's, I don't know. I just don't like it at all. The interface is not intuitive. And I know you can use Alexa on it. I haven't, and I guess I should. And the Roku's interface, even though I like the Roku a lot, it's so dated. Usually if I want to watch anything on Amazon, I'll usually just use the Roku because it's easier than the Fire Stick to be able to do it. But this would be a big thing for me, particularly if I can stay on one device and not have to flip around. I think I would finish a lot more of the stuff that's on there. I do wonder, because I know one of the hangups was the business terms. Sort of like on iOS, you can't buy anything through it. You have to go to Amazon's site and authorize anything you want to buy that's beyond the normal stuff that's included with Prime. So I wonder if they got that worked out behind the scenes or not. It sounds like that's what had happened, but you know, it's too early to tell, I guess, but I hope so.
They just have to force the developers' hands to make them work nice together. Jeff and Tim, I mean.
Well, you'd have to think there has to be something with the cut that one company is getting versus the other. So that's always been the sticking point of Amazon not wanting to play nice with anyone else. And of course, Amazon had pulled all the Apple TVs and Chromecasts out of the Amazon store about, a little over a year ago. Or maybe closer to 18 months. It's been a while since you've been able to buy one of those through Amazon. So hopefully this Cold War is coming to an end.
It's just funny when those things happen, you know, because, you know, Apple's done it too, where they pull things off of their store, be it the digital store or the physical store. Amazon does it too. It's like you just wonder what's going on behind the scenes that sort of made the other one angry to where that they would do something sort of drastic like that.
Money. It's always money. Oh, I did notice that Manchester by the Sea and what was the other one? Moonlight are both on Prime this month as well. I think Manchester by the Sea is already there, which I didn't see in the theater, so I'll probably watch that on Prime if I'm in the mood to be depressed.
Are they just on there to be on there? Or are they on there as sort of like a Oscar winner umbrella?
Well, Amazon financed Manchester by the Sea. Like that was the studio that actually released it, so that was a big win for them. And I think Moonlight may have been one of those A24 pictures. And I think Amazon has a longstanding deal to get all theirs as soon as they do their video run. But it seems like a very short window between the time these movies came out and the time that they're there. I guess it's been 6 months, but I don't know. Time just goes by quickly these days. But I do plan on.
Yeah, it just seems like the normal time, you know, the normal time has lapsed for movies to sort of hit the home video realm.
Then again, Doctor Strange will be hitting Netflix at the end of the month, and that only came out on video in like, I don't know, February or something. So I guess 6 months. Used to be when we were kids, it took 6 months for a movie to go from the theaters to home video. And now it's like 90 days between the time it's released and home video, and then 6 months before it hits pay TV.
It feels dirty to even say home video anymore, because I always think about the VHS tapes you would see that would arrive in your local video store. Whereas with today, with films going from so quickly to being in the theater to being able to be viewed at home, they've really blurred that line, and it just feels weird to call it home video anymore.
Digital download. Get it.
I mean, that's the real word.
Get it on digital. I see that all the time too. So I hope that does happen, because I'm really wanting to just not get off the Apple TV. I just want to stay on that one device. Let's see what else happened this week that was kind of interesting. We saw that there was a rumor that Apple is working on its own standalone device like Alexa or Google Home. And then we had Phil Schiller pop up in an interview and say that he really didn't like those standalone services. So I don't know if that's out there just to throw water on that rumor or what exactly is going on there to say that. But I thought that was kind of strange. He did make the sort of the same case that we did, that without having a screen or something to look at to give you additional context information, that a lot of the digital home assistants were kind of limited in that regard. What did you think about his comments?
Well, you know, the Apple's always been sort of that GUI world, if you will, where, you know, you have a GUI interface on your phone and your watch and everything. I can agree with him where he thinks that it's sort of useless, you know, or maybe they just feel like they don't have anything to offer that's just voice only, where you don't have the integrated GUI and voice together on the same device.
Outside of Spotify and timers, do you use your Echo for a lot? I mean, I know you'll do the Jeopardy thing. Sometimes I'll do that as well, and all those other little things. But do you really, outside of the music and, you know, maybe the news brief or something like that, what do you end up using it for more often than not?
It's mostly other than the other stuff what you just talked about, you know, timers and alarms. But I really use it to listen to the radio when I'm, say, washing dishes or cooking, sort of like I'll say play WHYY or something. And it's really just for me to listen to public radio. I really don't use it to listen to regular musical terrestrial radio and podcast. I do that too, but it is sort of limited in its scope as far as what I use it for. I guess I'm sure I could be using it for a lot more. There's supposedly a thing where you can sort of have a family grocery list where you can just say, "Hey, lady, add this to the grocery list." But my wife and I already use a grocery list or a list app that we have a grocery list in, and it doesn't connect to that.
See, that's the thing where I think the biggest limitation is, and this is something I've thought about, where Apple and certainly Google right now has an advantage, is that they provide things like calendar, email, contacts, those types of things as a general service, whether it's through Gmail or Google Calendar versus iCloud. Amazon really doesn't have that equivalent. You know, getting that contextual information would really be a lot easier for Apple or Google than it would be for Amazon, unless Amazon got into that game, which I don't really think that they will. And that's where a lot of the limited functionality happens for me. I use Todoist primarily these days, and it has a nice integration with IFTTT so that you can say if you can give yourself tasks through the Echo and it will add it to your Todoist list. So that's kind of nice. That's a neat integration. But again, it's one additional layer. A lot of those IFTTT integrations with Alexa are great, but you always have to say, you know, trigger so-and-so, trigger this, trigger that, instead of, you know, using it like you would within a normal context. So it's still a little kind of clunky, but I don't know. That's something that I do hope Apple gets into this game. And I've actually considered doing the Google Home just to see if it was any better. Like if there were contextual things that I want to do that it could do better than the Echo, but I just haven't been willing to drop $150 or whatever the cost is to play around with it as a toy.
My wife and I use an app called AnyList. They have a recipe book built in, a recipe calendar, if you will, so you could say what you're going to have every night of the week. And we do that anyway. My wife and I will sit down on Sunday night and plan out what we're going to cook. That way, it's not a lot of work to come in at 6 p.m. and say, "Well, what are we going to eat tonight?" You know, we actually already know. It's already, you know, we've already bought the ingredients because I've gone to the grocery store, say, Sunday night or Monday morning or Monday, and we've got everything in the pantry ready to go. There is a nice integration between iOS and that app. I'm sorry, between iOS reminders and that app. So I can just say, "Hey, Apple, add blah to the grocery list." And then when I go and open AnyList on my phone, it goes ahead and pulls it into that grocery list, which is nice.
I've been using Paprika for that purpose. It's a program that's on iOS and Mac and everything else, sort of ubiquitous across all platforms. I've tried to do the meal planning thing too, but that's a little difficult in my house.
Well, you know, my wife and I both have sort of similar hours, but you know, with your wife and you have daytime hours and she sort of has evening and late evening hours just because of where she works. I mean, that's understandable. And you know, it kind of sucks to have to make something and then she comes home at, say, I don't know, 10 o'clock and her food's cold. I mean, that's not any fun.
No, it really isn't. It's annoying. One day we'll get around to fixing that. Yeah, having those integrations are kind of nice. And that's something that it's where I think there's a shortcoming, unless Amazon beefs up those services that it presents, which I guess it could. Which leads us to the next thing that we heard this week, was that the Echo may be getting a built-in screen. There was an article that we'll put in the show notes, and it looked pretty much like somebody had sort of grafted a Fire or something onto a speaker, an Amazon Fire. What is it? The Fire tablet, which, you know, again, why wouldn't you just do that and call it done? But the article calls it very primitive, says it's straight out of 2005, which, you know, looking at it, I didn't think it was bad, but I didn't think it was groundbreaking either.
The photo, and I realized it was just sort of a mock-up, it reminded me of, there was this device that was out a few years ago that you could surf the internet from your bed, and it had soft edges. I don't remember what it was called, though. And I think Jim had one, and it had a silly little funny, kid toys name. Gosh, I wish, because he could tell you right off.
Was it something that was on Kickstarter? I'm just kidding.
No, I don't think so. But it was like Wooboo, or I don't know. It was a strange name. And I remember him saying he didn't use it a lot, but it was nice to have. And I think that was before maybe he had bought an iPad for both him and the wife and all this. But it sort of had a single use sort of scenario where you just surf on it. Anyway, I'm trying to remember what I was getting back to.
The screen, like the Echo, yeah.
the device they show looks sort of like a clock radio and that Google router that was out for a while that was so expensive. It came out a couple of years ago. It
had Yeah. I know the one you mean. Yeah, I recall.
And I think Jim even bought one of those, too. And it might have been a Kickstarter device.
Incidentally, for our listeners, Jim in New York City messaged us the other day and said he was near the Kickstarter HQ. And he wondered if he should stop in.
He just runs in, I love you guys.
And he would never leave. He would never stop backing ideas. He ought to be on Shark Tank. That's really where Jim belongs, is Shark Tank, I believe.
The problem is he would back everybody that comes in. It's like, hey, I really want to make this new thing where people eat blue shrimp. And he's like, I'll give you $50 million.
I'm all in, dog. No lie, he would. I have no experience making anything, manufacturing anything, and I don't know how I'm going to do it. But man, I'm gonna make this blue shrimp device. It's going to be great.
That is a great idea.
But anyway, I distracted you. So Jim had this. It was like it had a screen. You could surf from the web. And that's what it reminded you of. In what way?
I guess just because it had sort of that just hokey look. Because it just sort of looked like a single-use type device. It didn't really have a much more purpose than maybe a device you would surf with. And you know, the picture that they showed, the mock-up, didn't really look like a multifunction device that you would expect the Echo to be with a screen.
I think before something like this really debuts or is going to even be useful, it's going to have to be sort of like when you do a search on Apple's assistant, whose name I won't invoke. But you know what? You have to use two words to invoke it, so I can say it. If you were doing a search on Siri, what you would want it to do is, you know, sometimes when you stump it and you ask it something and it comes back with, here's a list of relevant web results. You would need it to be smarter to be able to provide you the exact thing that you're looking for a lot of the time if it's a question that it can't answer. Now, plenty of times I'll be watching a TV show and I'll see an actor or actress and I'll be like, I'll invoke Siri and say, how old is that actor? And that it always gets right. Oh, that actor is 33 years and 16 days and whatever else. It actually got that specific the other day. But it needs something where you're going to get that contextual awareness, something that's going to spit out something relevant. Like, I'm afraid for most of those, it would just be, you know, overlaying text on what you've already said. I think the example Schiller gave was like with maps and directions and those types of things. But I mean, even like even cooking, like I know you can do recipes on Alexa, but why would I want to? I wouldn't want it to read things out to me like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I need some. I'm very visual in that regard. I need something I can look at. I don't need something that I can get 4 cups of flour, 3 eggs, some water. You know what I mean? I don't work that way.
It would be nice if it had some sort of, instead of like a microphone, obviously you would need a microphone on it, but in addition to a microphone, it has some sort of smell-o-phone to where it can tell, like, oh, I see you're cooking pad thai. You know, it smells fish sauce or tamarind, and it says, oh, I see you're cooking pad thai. Do you need blah, blah, blah?
I think at some point you'll just be able to take a picture of the inside of your pantry and just have it spit out recipes based off of the ingredients that you have available. That would be more useful.
You've got like mustard and onions in the pantry and it says, well, all right, what can I make with this?
So Apple was named the largest wearables vendor with an estimated 3.5 million Apple Watch shipments in the first quarter of 2017. I thought this was kind of interesting because on the investor call this past week, Tim Cook talked about how if the Apple Watch was a standalone business, it would be a Fortune 500 company. But yet, everything that I see online is typically overwhelmingly negative. Like, well, you know, it's I see a lot of people on Twitter this week where it's like, you know, this is a failed app platform and it's just good for notifications and fitness and that's it. You know, to me, if both of these statements are true, if it would be a Fortune 500 company, it's only good for this, then people must really love fitness and notifications, I guess.
Well, I see all kind of people still wearing the Fitbit and even the little bitty chiclet size Fitbit, or even the newer one, the big one that has the gray octagonal silver frame around it. I mean, people are still buying those things. So
that blows me away too. It's very shocking to me that people do that. But, you know, ever since I got the Apple Watch a couple of years ago, I pay attention to what's on people's wrists a lot more than I have in the past. And it's pretty much either Fitbit or Apple Watches that I see on people's arms. I don't see much of I don't see much of anything else these days. And that's not just being in tech circles. Maybe that's just a virtue of going to the gym a lot too. But out in the real world, that's what I typically tend to notice too. A lot more Fitbits than I would have expected, which is strange to me given how the state of that company is right now.
I always catch myself looking at people's wrists just because I'm a watch guy and I just want to see what people have on their wrist. And, you know, most of the time you see the black screen on their hand and it's one of those two things. It's that newer Fitbit or the Apple Watch. So you can't really sort of thumb your nose at the whole market that is the notification and fitness armband market.
You know, when I see the talk online saying it's a failed app platform, the thing that comes to mind for me, there's two things. First, the applications that I keep in the dock on the watch, those load ridiculously fast compared to doing a normal app, spawning a normal app on the watch, because they're always preloaded in memory, I think is what I understood as virtue of being in the dock. Now, you can only have 10 applications in there, I think, but everything that I use, which is less than 10 applications, launches pretty quick. So if I need to pay for something at Starbucks, the wallet is automatically there. My gym membership card right there. Doing the now playing so that if, you know, I have if I'm listening to something on my phone, I can, you know, rewind, pause, those types of things. Now, some of these are first party integrations, but things like Fantastical open really quickly, so long as that they're in the dock. So when I see people say that, the first thing that I wonder is, are they using things that are in the dock? And I think a lot of this came to light because, you know, we had Amazon, Google, and eBay pull their watch apps from the store, or at least the watch functionality out of those apps. Amazon's and eBay's functionality was stupid. I mean, honestly, it didn't do anything. I'm going to pull up my watch and buy something through the watch sight unseen. I mean, maybe you can do that, but I never would have done that. Google Maps being pulled was the only one that was sort of irritating. But I think part of the problem is that you have to be able to get the same sort of first party support in some of these apps. Like the Apple Maps app on the watch is great. Like when I'm walking, let's say I'm going to a city that I've never been to and I'm walking around downtown, I can put in where I'm going, put my phone in my pocket and just head off in a direction. And when it's time to turn, it'll thump my wrist. I'll look at my watch and see which direction I'm supposed to go in and for how many feet. And I've used that several times, I think in Nashville and other places that I've been where I didn't really know the area. And it's worked pretty well, I gotta say. If Google Maps had that same, if they were allowed to have that same level of support, I think it would be a whole new ballgame.
And you don't look like a tourist ready to be hit on the back of the head with a bat because you're staring at your phone screen trying to figure out where you are.
Exactly. You might as well have had a target on your back of, you know, this guy's not from here. So being able to that is an underrated feature too. Now, if you use Apple Maps while you're driving, you get the same thing. So if you have a turn coming up, it'll tap your wrist and say, hey, you know, turn right up here. So that you know what you're doing. That being able to tap the wrist and give you those notifications is, and you know, you could argue, well, that's still a notifications platform. True, but it's using it in a way that a normal notification isn't, right? It's using it in a non-obvious way. So, I mean, that is as bad a rap as Apple Maps gets, that is actually a really, really useful feature. And I haven't had that really go wrong yet when I'm in an area like that. Like I need to go 8 blocks down, 3 blocks this way and 2 blocks that way. It has never let me down yet. And you can just, again, as long as you know what the next direction is, like go down here and then hang a right. Well, you know, as soon as it taps my wrist, I know, hey, I need to get ready to make that right here.
And it requires that sort of deep integration whenever you've got an app like that where you need street level turn by turn. Like if you're walking blocks within a metro or a downtown type area, you know, you would never have that 20 years ago just with regular old GPS as far as like having, I mean, I guess you would in a sense, but it wasn't really like Google. They've already had the cars drive down the street and map out and the distances and everything. And sort of with old school GPS, it's just sort of like, where are you on the map? And you would have your E911 services always put in where the addresses were, but it didn't have all the vectors built into it that it does now. So it's way more detailed than it used to be. And what I was going to say about you were saying they pulled the Amazon app off the phone. I mean, yes, it's kind of useless as far as buying a new thing, but you know, if it could pull up, say, your order history and you could, you know, you bought a bag of dog food and you're about to run out, you just pull up your watch and order another bag of dog food and it's generated off of, you know, your old order information. So it's buy this again sort of integration. I mean, that's still useful to me because it's kind of like the dash button integration where you have the dash button right next to the dog food where you keep it in the pantry or right next to the garage door or whatever, and you see that you're getting low, you punch the dash button.
See, this brings up a very good point, too, about the types of integrations. One of the use cases that I use with mine more than anything is with Siri, and I find that to be much better on the watch than anywhere else, and I've said that many, many times. If they were to open the SiriKit integration to parties like Amazon, like think about how transformative that could be. So on the phone, now you can use, you know, you can use Siri to use PayPal or Venmo and shoot people money just by invoking Siri, you know, telling it to send somebody some cash. What if you could invoke Siri and say, reorder the last whatever that I bought from Amazon, the last dishwashing detergent or whatever? It had that awareness to be able to go in and say, okay, I see the last thing that you ordered of this. I'm going to go ahead and reorder it and be done.
Yeah, right. That would be perfect.
And see, that's the thing I think a lot of people aren't using the watch for. Maybe I'm just the weird outlier, because when I see stuff like this, I think, well, what do I do with it that's different than this? I reply to text messages all the time, either with just an emoji, with being able to speak into the mic and have it transcribed. I'll use the Scribble functionality a lot more than I thought that I would, because it's actually pretty good at picking up things. So like if I have some friends that I play video games with on Skype, and I'll see the Skype notification. Last night they pinged me, "Hey, are you around?" And I could have just, you know, hit the microphone and said no, but instead I hit Scribble and said I'm not, and then just sent. And to me, that it's transformative, because a lot of times my phone may be sitting, you know, 20, 30 feet away. My watch is always on me, and it's an easy way to do it. So I don't understand when I see people that are saying this is a failed app platform, and I think of all the things that I do with it that are not just fitness. Now, you could say, well, it's notification-based, but I'm actually replying to things, and I have different vectors that I can use to do that. I can use speech, I can use writing, or I could just use emoji or pre-canned responses. So maybe I'm just the weirdo, but you know, I actually use this a lot more than just, hey, I've closed all three rings today for the 110th day in a row.
Well, I'm not trying to fluff your feathers or whatever, however that saying goes, but you know, it's like when the watch came out, it was like a light bulb went off for you. And you're like, I can do this with it and I can do that with it. And when a device comes out that like that for other people, they say, well, I don't know if I'll have a use for that. And then they see 15 people around them all have the same device, and they think, oh, I'll just go get that. And then they get it, and then they decide it's just a glorified watch for me, and they don't have that light bulb moment where they figure out how to integrate it into their life, other than say doing fitness stuff with it. It's like, oh, well, I can do fitness stuff with it now that I wasn't doing before, and that's really all they're using it for.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's probably the real failure. The real failure is, you know, like when the iPhone came out, it was automatically intuitive to people, this is transformative. This comes out and it's nowhere near where it needs to be, but it's nowhere as limited, I think, in a lot of ways than the perception of it is. And I think that's the difference, is that it's not inherently intuitive, all the things you can do with it. It kind of reminds me, I saw an Onion story the other day, and I think I retweeted this, where it was like, man can't wait till the day a computer can do what the computer can already do, which just sort of highlights the inability for a person to understand something. I can't wait for it to do this, yet it already does this and has for quite some time. And I think that's kind of what some of this is.
That button is over here.
How many times? I mean, you must run into that a lot too, where I want my computer to do this. It can't do that. Sure it can.
Oh, of course I do. All the time. And I say, well, you just do this. And they're like, wow. There's a wow moment. And thanks,
like you
Brad.
Came up with
and
it.
And then, yeah. You know, I send them a bill. Then I send them a bill and they're like, wow, are you sure this bill should be this much? Like, yes, especially now.
You paid your stupid tax. So we saw some news that the next iPhone could be delayed till early 2018, and that also sort of leads us into another topic. So Apple released its earnings this past week, and something that was kind of disturbing, I guess, for analysts. I mean, it had a really, really good quarter, but sales were really down in China, I think, and that sort of impacted the overall numbers for the company. The numbers were kind of flat they were down for the iPad, they were flat for the Mac, and I think they were nearly flat for the iPhone. So they came in under just under expectations on this. And that's why I kind of doubt that the next iPhone is going to be delayed until early 2018. I mean, everything in their power is going to have to be done to make sure that this thing ships to as close to on time as possible, because this really is the company at this point. This can't be like a Mac Pro where it sits and languishes for 4 years, or a MacBook Pro where it doesn't get updated for 2.5 years. This has to happen, and it has to happen on a regular schedule, or their stock will take a very big hit. I have a feeling it's going to be like the jet black iPhone, where it's very hard to come by for up to a couple of months, but I still think technically it's going to be released on a certain day, and that's going to probably ship on schedule.
Just as long as you're up at 3 a.m. on release day, you'll get one, and you won't be delayed like everyone else.
And really, who isn't, right? No, so that's, I mean, I had my jet black iPhone 7 Plus. I didn't get it on release day that Friday. It came that Monday. So, you know, I know the struggle.
Yeah, I almost had to wait those 3 months. I had to wait 3 days.
No, now that I'm on the upgrade program, though, I wonder. I saw the problems people had last year, and it almost really put me off from trying it, where you go to order and it's like, sorry, you can't have one. But if you bought one new, you'd be fine. It's like, wait a minute. If we're in this upgrade program, we're giving you money all year long in perpetuity.
For the whole purpose of being able to get the upgrade, not necessarily before everybody else, but to just get it in your hands.
At the same time as everyone else would be kind of nice, you know.
Right.
Hopefully they got the bugs worked out on that, or that will be the focus of an entire future episode come about September, I do believe. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be delayed. I just think it's going to be limited quantities. And I still keep seeing these rumors pop up with the touch ID sensor on the back, and I sure hope they don't do that. It seems very un-Apple-like.
That just seems silly. I remember somebody showing me their Android phone, and I'm talking about several years ago, and this might be right maybe a year before Apple had added Touch ID to their phone, and it was on the back. And he's like, look, I can even unlock my phone with my thumbprint, and it was on the back. And I'm just, of course, I don't want to be, you know, a jerk and say, well, that's dumb. But at the same time, it's like in my head, I'm thinking, why would they put that on the back? And it does seem very un-Apple-like and just very backwards in the sense of what usability is.
I know if they can't get it in the screen, but if they can't get it in the screen, I would see them sooner keeping a little bit of a bezel for the Touch ID rather than putting it on the back. I have a hard time feeling they would actually do that. It just seems so, I don't know.
Un-Johnny Ive and un-Apple.
I mean, a lot of times if they make a decision, I can say, oh, that looks kind of nice, but this would just be the ugliest thing. And also, they even had to get permission from the FCC to put the FCC ID information in the U.S. inside the phone and software. Used to, if you ever looked on the back of an iPhone, you would see at the very bottom they would have the FCC ID information written so microscopically you would almost have to use a magnifying glass to see it. And now that's in the phone. I don't think they would want anything detracting from... Of course, if you put it on the phone in the back, it would have to be in the middle where your fingers would rest when you're holding the phone, and that would put it right up there next to the Apple logo, which I just don't see them doing. I really just don't see them doing that at all. Having this big, ugly thing sitting in the back right next to the logo, which would be round, which is also similar to how their logo looks. I don't know. I think I see Johnny Ive committing seppuku before I would see him allowing something like that to ruin the aesthetics of the back of the phone.
He just leaves Apple one day. This was it. This was the final thing. Never again.
Of course, I don't see the thing happening that The Verge mockingly mocked up, which had a Touch ID dongle. It's like, no, there's not going to be a Touch ID dongle. Side note, I had a friend hit me up this week on advice for which MacBook to buy for his niece. And we were talking about it, and I think the candidates that he had presented were the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro. And I said, well, you know, you forgot another option is just the regular MacBook that came out in 2015, the one with the Retina display. So I lay out the pros and the cons of which one I think they should get. And I went for the non-touch bar version of, or as it's known colloquially as the MacBook Escape, MacBook Pro. I was like, this is the one you should get. And his argument against that initially was, well, you know, my niece is going to be using this, and occasionally she has to turn in homework on a USB thumb drive. And since it only has a USB-C, you know, I don't want her having to carry on a bunch of dongles. And I wrote back, I was like, really, a bunch of dongles or a single USB-C to USB-A dongle for the occasional time that she has to do a thumb drive, really?
I don't know who all makes it, but I know Kingston at least makes one, but they make a thumb drive that has the old school USB on one. I guess that's USB A.
A, it's A.
And then, or is it B? I don't forget. But it has A on one end and C on the other end. And it has a little slider cover that you slide and cover one that you're not using and plug it in, or you pull it out and flip it over the other side. Anyway, it's got that dual port on it so that you could do something like that. And then you don't need a dongle. And that would be perfect for someone in her situation.
Well, seeing how thumb drives can sometimes get lost, particularly if they're handled by children, even as an adult, I sometimes will lose them, unfortunately. So I can understand if maybe that's out of the, if they're hesitant to do that. A surprising amount are.
Well, if you're going to lose the thumb drive, you could lose the dongle too.
That's true. That is true. That, well, of course, you give the thumb drive to the teacher, and who knows if the teacher's smart enough to know that there's two ends on the, you never can tell. But no, I agree with you though. If most of her work, it turns out, is done through Google Docs, I guess, or Google Office or whatever the suite is, which yay insidious Google for getting into that market and brainwashing kids before they get out of always have a Google account, get one for school, and then you can use it the rest of your life. Yeah, great.
We'll have you until you die.
You know, that's really what their thought process is. Just like smoking. Using Google Office is just like smoking.
Or they'll just have some sort of giant, deep information service they could start selling term papers to people. All stemmed off of all this plagiarized work from all of these kids saving their work on Google Drive.
The anti-Turnitin or whatever service, Turnitin. Have you ever seen those?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, I went back to school a few years ago and I was writing papers and there's a service out there that I'm sure many of our listeners are probably familiar with called Turnitin. And it's this this search engine for term papers that will analyze your term paper for plagiarism. So that's they've put machine learning on this. Now, the controversy that came up with this a few years ago is that when you write a term paper, it's your original work, your created work. Well, the terms of use for Turnitin is that once you write a paper and your professor, if your school uses the service, they scan in your paper and they use that as part of their database. You're essentially, against your will, building their analytics engine for being able to detect plagiarism, which some students, I think, had sued them and said, hey, this is my original work. I'm not just giving this to you to use in perpetuity. And I think it got struck down by some sympathetic court that said, nope, that they get to use it if they want to. So sorry, if you want to use the school, this is what your terms are, which I got to side with the students on that one. That seems a little bogus that you're forced into helping a company build its business model against your will with your data.
I can see, and I'm not trying to side with one or the other, but I can see where they would feed your paper in. So in case you decided to sell your paper to another third party, they would be able to search your paper against that newly sort of written paper that wasn't really written at all to be able to detect plagiarism. And sure enough, there would be, 100% hit if you say sold your term paper from 3 years prior to another person. But
it could be used for nefarious purposes, but by the same token, it's weird to have a company whose business model, they are successful. They succeed or fail based on data that's put into this engine. The data that is fed into this engine is provided by universities off of work. Basically, they're getting free data to be able to build their service. And you have no way of opting out of it, of saying, you know what, this is my original work. I don't want you to have a copy of this. I don't want you to use this to do that. It doesn't matter, I guess, what the reason is necessarily, but it's kind of weird to me that sort of situation even is allowed to exist. I mean, it's a great thing. And of course, I never plagiarized anything, so it wasn't a problem. Glad it didn't exist when I was in high school, because I sold papers like crazy when I was, and they were all original works, but they were never old papers. They were all fresh content, but still.
Yeah, but we're talking about old. You and I are both 41, and you're talking about before the internet or Google or even a service like Turnitin would have been around. So you wouldn't really have had a way to double check those things. I mean, what did teachers have? All of the resources in the library, so that it had encyclopedias and any other printed book to be able to check your work against. And that was near impossible to be able to check all those sources and be able to get all those papers graded for, say, if you taught six classes a day, if you're an English teacher and, cover six times 30 kids and do it on a regular basis. Say if you had them do biweekly paper or semi-weekly papers or something, it would be an daunting task.
Wow, we really diverted there. I didn't realize you didn't know about Turnitin. It's a fun thing. It was always nice. You'd turn it in and you would see the running analytics or analyzing your paper. And like, there's a 3% chance you plagiarize this. I'm like, 3%? There's a 0% chance, dude. This is all me, baby.
All me.
That might be the show title. Well, I think that's actually everything that I had wanted to talk about. You got anything you want to bring up, Brad?
No, I think I'm good.
Well, I guess next week, Jim will return and we'll be able to ask him all about his travels. I noticed we did get a picture from, it looked like the Apple store up there in New York.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of the Apple Geeks Mecca, if you will, because even 4 or 5 years ago, when you would see the lines of people wrapped around the buildings, you would think, man, it'd be kind of cool to go see that, to go there and maybe buy something from that Apple store, because those are sort of the iconic Apple stores you would see in the media whenever they do a news story on people who are wrapped around the store to buy the latest blah, blah, blah. And so...
Yeah, the big glass cube building there in New York City looked really nice.
Right, right, right.
Though I was at the San Francisco one when Steve Jobs died, so that was just so happened that the Oracle conference was going on in San Francisco at the same time, and that was kind of weird seeing all the notes and tributes and other stuff that people left out there. Which I don't know if they did that the New York one, but the San Francisco one was pretty cool.
Well, being that was his, you know, playing ground.
That would have been his Apple right. store, yes. Well, that'll do her for this week, and I'll holler at you next week there, Brad. Take it easy, man.
Take it easy, sir. Have a great week.
You too.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim, and Brad is @MeesterIdol. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.